18th, 1979, talking to Henry Acata in Nolato.
Well, when we talk about family, well, how did you meet your wife?
I didn't know. Well, we've been married for since 1950. Yeah. Just not sure, I guess. Just like that, I guess.
She's from here, too?
Yeah, she's from here. She had a bunch of brothers. Shucks, you'll see the graveyard of Chris. He must have. There was measles. I don't know what year the measles went. Came here. She was Freddy. That's where he killed a lot of people. A lot of pregnant women, you know, get killed. They just get measles and just died. They just died. I thought, gee, was afraid I had measles. And, well, you like the way we sit, you see, we just have to be slacking off on food, you know, because my mother didn't have no job or nothing, you know. Every little cent that she gets, you know, she's trying to save it of what little we run out of, you know. Measles, she was sick, fish running, nobody couldn't work, but it really took a lot of people, that measles stuff. He lost, I don't know how many brothers that time. He lost them pretty all in 1 year. They were a big family too. There were about 13 or 14 of them in the family. And just her, she just got one brother left. Sebastian McGinty. That's all she's got left.
So that was the McGinty family?
Yeah, that was the McGinty family. And he lost his father. Now his mother, she's half blind, barely gets around. Esther McGinty is her name. And there's Sebastian and Patricia, Tecla, Kristen. There's just about four of them left. Dear, that was the biggest family, that one. He put and lost them in all in just 1 year, just right after another, just month after month. Just died off.
What is your wife's name?
Patricia. Yeah. Yeah, it was really hard. Yeah. And then I'd taken care of this guy, cooking all them places, you know, going up there to maintain them. When they first told me, you gotta take care of guy cook, to maintain the guy cook, you know, I thought to myself, it's all furnaces, you know, I thought, no pipes or anything, you know. But it's just a problem, just like here, it's just pipes and stuff like that, building and stuff. I thought it would have been hard, you know. When I start doing it, it's just doing the same thing as what you do here. It's just, you just have to just be right with it.
So that's your job then, as maintenance. They yeah. Started to spread you out. They say, send you around some other places.
Yeah, you see, I started out with a janitor first. But like the way I said, you see, hooking up the stoves, working on stoves. I picked that up all from the oil camp. Like Archie Turman was a laborer out there too at the oil camp, and he was going to get laid off. He had no equipment, driving or schooling too, nothing. He learned all that. Then he asked this guy, one roughneck quit. But I didn't want to get on the roughneck. So he asked to see if he could be a roughneck. Roughneck pay was cheaper than our pay. We were getting $3 an hour, and they were getting $2.50 an hour. But he wanted to work too, because he had a family too. But he learned more than what he ever learned in the school oil well, he went to school for, he said. He learned more at that oil drilling there than what he learned there, what he know right up to today. Now he's working in Galena, taking care of the Utana. Now he's got his own mill, all that stuff. Right after we got through the oil, with the oil camp. That oil camp really helped us for what we knew right now.
What happened to that oil camp?
Well, what happened now, you see, this this is the way it went. We went down 3,015 feet, but it was a dry hole. It was a dry hole there, so that's all the thing that they could allow them. That's the farthest the money went. They just had enough money to drill one hole. But I asked this geologist, every day I used to go visit him. I wanted to learn more about this oil drilling. And he got them drilling with the drilling for the rocks just floats up, you know, and just going through the screen, water just screaming at you. And they pick up all the shelter, what's coming up, every foot that's going down. And then he start telling me what different color it is at every different foot. He's got the map and clear glasses and all that to watch them rocks, and he'll let me look at it. You can see just like them in the little rocks which color it is. And he told me that he went down 3,015 feet and had a rock there about 3-inch diameter, about an inch thick, that came out of that hole, you know, 3,015 feet. And you know what surprised at me? They lost a gear tooth there. It's about 3-inch diameter gear tooth. What that just drills down there, you know. They lost that one tooth, one gear there, one, it's about that big. They had 15 feet more to drill. They allowed them 15 feet more before they tap it off. They said they lost the drill. I heard them coming out of the hole. You just heard them 12 jimmies just humming when they're coming out of the hole. And every section, every 20 feet, they got a section, you know. They connect there. You just hear them jimmies, you know. You hear them when they're coming out. And I used to go there every time, every night when they start drilling. I wanted to see more about it. It was just a thing to me. I go up there just to watching them about 10 or 10, 11 o'clock at night, just walking around them, see what they're all doing. They said they had, everybody was happy. They had 15 feet more to drill, and that'll take them about, putting her 3 weeks before they go 15 feet, you know. We don't have no trouble, they said. Pretty soon they lost a tooth. Oh, the tooth is about 3-inch diameter. It's all gears that just turns. They lost, broke one off down there, 3,000 feet down. Boy, I thought to myself, well, this is where the fun going to be at. I don't know how the hell they're going to get it out. And the inspector was right in there. They got that bugger out of there. They just sent something down. I don't know what the name, I don't know what he sent down there. They had it right out. They just took it right out. Boy, surprising. And they had some kind of instruments outside of the derrick. Or big as this room here. And the whole instruments was right in that panel there and taking pictures of that hole down there. You see all the instruments. Well, they had a special guy in there come all the way up from the state taking pictures down there of it. I asked the guy, what's all the instruments for? Well, he said, tell me that instrument's doing that, this one doing this. You see, all them instruments just doing what you're supposed to be doing, I guess. And this person, red light came on. He said, the wire is down at the end of the hole now. I'm going to start taking pictures. You see them instruments just jumping forth and back when he press a button. I tell him what it's doing now. Well, we're taking pictures down coming up in the hole now. It's going to be, it's all of them in that kind of a cake down there, he said. Well, I don't know what the cake was too then, you know, time. He said, it'll be all on that tape and bring it home and bring it out there and run it through a machine and they'll show what the hole looks like down there. He said, if he had the machine there, he would show it to me how it works. Boy, you know, I was surprising, you know. I know I was not going to run that thing around. I'll never see it, you know, but I was just interested in what that machine was doing, you know. And he, you know, he just keep telling me what it is. It's really good to have questions, you know. You learn more. Like the way this, like when they were tapping that hole off where they drilled, you know, they had to pour concrete 75 feet down the hole to tap it off. And then they put a pipe down in that. After they put down 75 feet of concrete, they stuck a pipe right down and they just cement the whole thing. And I asked them, what you're doing that for? Well, they said there might be a gas will someplace close and it might explode. So we have to cover this place up with cement. We got cement down 75 feet down and they shut her down. And what I learned more there, when we quit drilling, it snowed about it. Archie quit on us. It snowed about 6 inches. We was running with the bomb, but they were running forth and back. Well, they tell us to clean up the camp. We start cleaning it up. And the snow kind of melted us from us again. And then we made a big pit with a cat. When I started learning to drive cat, I knew a little bit how to drive does and cat, you know. So we dug a pit. We were dragging it all about 12 feet long by 12 inch thick iron. We just barely handled it with the cat that's on. Can't lift it. We just drag it around. So we just drag that whole place. And when we passed the inspection, that ground was like the way it was. Just when we first moved in, it was just had to be that clean. And you find a cigarette butts or any place where we were dragging, it never passed the inspection. We were doing that for one whole week and it was cold. Inspector come in. If you see, it's kind of not dirty like yet. Never passed. Never. Gee, my Christmas. And then when they covered the hole back, the pit back up, we just had to level it off just like the way we first went in there. Just not even a piece of paper or a piece of can be sticking out. Not even a drum. I think though, we got a 3,015 feet of runway up there too. DC-3 used to land there. Like one time, it was DC-3 landed there. It was windier than hell. And the snow was just, while I was unloading the plane, the runway just got covered, drifted. We worked there the whole night. Well, I wasn't really dozer operator. I was helping this mechanic. We had two cats go. Well, he did more than what I did. You know, I was just pushing snow. And he was using, I don't know, second and third gear. Me, I was just using second gear mostly. And I just didn't know what I was doing. You know, telling once in a while I stopped, talked to him, but we couldn't get ahead of that drift. It was just that storm. We have to run down to the Herman Nielsen, keep that thing going, to keep the plane going, to keep the plane warm. Towards morning, the wind died down. Then we got ahead, get ahead of it to clean the runway. He told me, well, just forget about the sides. We'll just go down the middle and just keep the middle open enough to let the plane take off. So he told me, we'll go side by side. But shucks, he just run away from me. I was going in second gear all the time, you know. Him, he just go, well, he's an operator, him. Then he shows me what to do and everything. Then still going up, he's going back down my side and he's meeting me back again. So He told me, that's all right, you'll learn. Stayed up all night. So by 7 o'clock, that plane took off with two drill pipes, over 500 pounds apiece. They liked the way I sit. He started his mechanic. He put a, where the weld is wearing out, you know, running in that rocks, drilling down. You keep that welding up. Then they had a welder came in from a outside, cold in December, it was really cold. Supposed to be a roughneck welder, but us guy, me and this mechanic, we have to heat up the welding machine and start it up for them every morning. So I just put this Herman Nielsen on it, just before I start fueling up the light plant. I heard the Herman Nielsen quit. So I stopped and I went out of this warmed up shed there. I looked at it, it was right up here. And here this mechanic was cranking it. I don't know how the hell it took off, that welder. It took off. So I told him that I just put the Herman Nielsen on it. He told me, you Alaskans, you don't know nothing. This thing should take right off. I told him, go ahead, run it. So started up, just ran for about 2 minutes, drove rock right through the block, broke the crankshaft, broke the connecting rod right through, pushed the crank. Well, the mechanic came to me, then you had that Herman Nielsen on it long enough. I told him that guy just started it up. As soon as I just put the Herman Nielsen on it, he told me, you Alaskans, you don't know nothing. It's the word he gave me, he told me. I told him. Brand new welder. He sent him right down the road, right there. Went to the office, reported. And then I told him about it, and I told him I'd put the Herman Nielsen on it. While I was fueling up the light plant, that guy just showed the Herman Nielsen off of it and cranked it over and took off and ran for about 2 minutes and choked rot. And I told him I just didn't heat up enough. But all he gave me was the Alaskans just don't know anything about equipment. And that's the work he gave me, I told him. So he was sitting down the road.
Well, you know, when you're talking about working and you're talking about clearing the runway and stuff like that, and you guys work all night long?
Well, we had to get that plane out. It didn't have no motor covers. So all we had was just blankets over the motors and stuck the Herman Nielsen ducts into the motors, you know. You know, well, they were just bringing in pipes, but the wind came up too fast while we were unloading, and it's right on top of the hill where there's no trees. And there was a lot of snow, and it wouldn't take off in 4 or 5 inches of snow.
But, you know, a lot of times these days people got jobs and they're going to go from certain hours. When they get finished those hours, they quit. But it seems like you work any hours.
Yeah, that's right. Like, you see, like that's like the way I say, you know, like a lot of this, all these years, I never get overtime for this, working at this school. I work 7 days a week in winter time with 50, 60 below. I put in, turn out a whole day on weekends and all. I never get no overtime for it. I know that thing. If I let it go, it's going to get ahead of me. It's going to get ahead of me, and then it'll be that much more work for me. And, you know, you have to be right on top of it. Like any construction job, you know, when you're working overtime, you know you're getting paid for it. But here, you know, you're just putting your 7.5 hours, and that's when you're supposed to quit. But no, there's something wrong. You have to fix that thing or see what's going, if it's going right or not, see.
Well, now, how is it that you do something like that and maybe some other guy won't do something like that?
Well, I just has to do it, you see. I just has to do it myself. Like last winter, like last fall, they called down from Keokuk. They said that their boiler went out. Well, I go up there by plane and I just set a certain hour to pick me up. You know, in December, days are short. By 3 o'clock, it's pretty dark. The runway there in bad. It's pretty small there in runway in Keokuk. So I told these guys to put some dry coal in this polar, so they didn't put enough dry coal in it. So what happened? The fill line bust, froze and bust, and this is when the boiler quit. And I couldn't figure it out right away. I went up there and I start up the boiler. It runs to, oh, it gets to about 30 degrees, the water temperature, about 30 degrees, and the boiler trips off. Where it was to run up to about 160 degrees temperature, the water. And it registered up to 30 and it kicks off. Jesus Christ, and I said, no, and no water, no heating system, no, it's supposed to circulate. So I spent the night there and I started thinking. I just stayed in the light plant house too that night. I asked this guy there, what do you think's wrong with it? Well, he doesn't know. He went to Holy Cross School. He doesn't know. So here's a check valve on a half-inch pipe. I turn it, this is a man-made, I thought to myself, you know. Man put it up, I can work at it too, I thought. I got kind of pissed off. Here I took the check valve off. And the valve test was supposed to be the raw water. Supposed to be keep filling the boiler. If the water is running low in the boiler, it gradually just comes on automatically. No water comes on. Right there, I told this guy, this line is froze. I tell him, well, let's tear up the utility door. A lot of snow on top of it, too. Hired a guy and we shoveled it all the way across. Worked till dark. Used lights outdoors, put up light, shoveled it all the way across, tore the lid off. Sure enough, 80 feet of that pipe was busted. All cracked here and there, you know, all froze. And I told him, who put these pipes in? Well, he said, the boiler guys that put in these boilers. You put any heat tapes on it? He said, no, I don't think so. So I went under the building, cut this line off right away. I tell him, well, tomorrow morning, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to cut this line up and I'll pull it out and see where they're broken. 80 feet of that pipe was busted. So I called into Nana, told him this 80 feet of this pipe busted. There was no heat tapes on it. So I put in new heat, all new pipes, and it came on down, got some pipes, went back up. The guy that works there, he told me, well, you did that before. Well, I told him, well, I'm going to tear out that pipes, you know. Just like he didn't believe, just like he didn't figure, he knew what I was doing. I told him, Roger, I know what I'm doing here, and I'll fix it. And if I had the pipes here, I would have fixed it today. But I don't have the pipes here. So I cut the pipe off. When I start cutting the pipe off, he thought he got kind of worried. Maybe he thought I didn't know what I was going to, he didn't know what I was doing, you know. I told him, I know what I'm doing, Roger. Don't worry, we'll fix it. So I pull up this pipe and I tell him, see where they're busted? And he couldn't believe it, how it's busted. That's because I told him it's got no heat tapes and your boiler is not circulating right, not enough antifreeze in it. What's causing it? And I broke my antifreeze tester. I told him, we will register these antifreeze for 50 blow or 60 blow. We will register it for 60 blow, I told him. Because that water circulates, heating your whole buildings. You got all hot water lines circulating back to your boilers. And it goes through the boilers and back into the buildings. That's what heating your buildings, I told him. It's all copper. And he's telling me it's making noise before that. You know, it's like the pipes was just going to bust. And I told him, you know what was doing that? Because it was lacking off on water. And your pipes was heating up too fast. And when it get that air there, it's pushing that pipes. And that's what was making that noise. That's when your raw water froze, was freezing up because it wasn't filling up the boiler fast enough. And your water was evaporating away from you, away from your boiler. And your water, when your boiler gets through the hot water, the temperature that you're asking for your thermostat, You know, you got a crevice that's coming down on the pipes there. And what you got your temperature set for, well, that's what that pipe's got to call for, but your water was lacking on your water. And you're, every time that boiler is running off, your, according to your thermostat, your water is overheating over the pipes because it was not pushing, it wasn't flowing steady, it was just pushing, you know. It was just pushing that steam that's with popping your pipes, I told him. And then he finally see the point, you know. And then I told him that I broke my tester. Since then I've been calling for a tester, dry call tester, and I still never got it yet. And last spring I went to Fairbanks and I just saw one there in Samson's Hardware. And I didn't pick up any. I let the district pick up one.
Just good. Do you have any questions?
Oh,
gee,
a lot of questions.
Okay. Did you have something else to add? I wanted to, well, I was going to talk about future things. Okay. Well, what do you see as in the future for you? Are you going to keep working here, doing what you have been doing? Are you...
Well, I try to push it to where I'm going to retire, just like the way my brother did. He retired from his work. I think that's just the way I figure to do. I'm just going to retire, work till I retire.
How far away is that?
Well, if I push another 14 more years, I think I'll have it made. I pushed over half of it, I guess. Long years.
So how many years do you have to work to retire?
Well, I'm 53 years old now. And as soon as I turn 65, if I make it. Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do then after you retire?
I'll just take it easy. Go around. Maybe all will probably go down if we save enough money. It might go someplace. We could just look at the world, look at the country.
Well, if you could go anywhere you wanted to go, where would you go?
Well, I would like to go down around Japan or someplace, just look around the country wherever my father was from, you know. They said, I heard that he's pretty good looking. Some kids went down there. Simeon went down with them, and I heard him talking about it, and he said it's really some country to see, you know. And I sure would, if I save enough money there, I think I would like to see it too. Just see how my father, the country he came from, you know, part of the country he came from. But it takes a lot of loot. I don't think I ever save enough money to go down that far. Always something by now, like next summer, next spring, if we save enough money for to buy a new kicker, we probably buy a new kicker next summer, next spring sometime.
What kind of kicker would you get?
50.
Mercury?
Yeah. So I'll just sit down, take it easy when I retire. Well, my brother is young. He don't even reach 60. He retired.
Well, now that was a brother that before he got that job, he said something about quitting trapping and going to...
That's the one that, you know, we were going up this Caillou Trail. And halfway up this Caillou Trail, we were staying under a pine tree. We were gone to the dogs. And it was snowing, blowing, windy. It was miserable. We were just sitting there under the tree with a little lean-out tent tarp over us. And he told me, well, he called me. I think it's going to be my last year on this trail. But you'll be on this trail yet, he told me. And what are you going to do? I'm going to look for a job next spring, next summer. Find a job, This is where I'm going to work. And that spring he left here, and that's the last time he just on left and he got a job. And he retired this January. Both of them retired. No, he's just on an easy chair. Now he got a trailer down in Arizona. Now he's going to move down to Arizona. He was just here for the Fred's funeral, and he told me that he'll be leaving in about a week and a half or 2 weeks after they sell his place in Canada. He's got a nice place, I guess. He's going to try to sell it. Somebody come up with the money he asked for. He said he just came back from Arizona. He spent 3 weeks down there setting up his trailer down there.
Do you have a place here in town too?
No. He left too, you know, my mother had a house, but we turned it over to our sister when my mother died. And now he tore it down. Now my sister got a different place. But he's talking about coming back next year for fishing, to get a few fish for himself. I guess he's figuring to stay down here at my camp now. I guess I told him to stay right at my camp if he wants to stay there.
That's Eddie?
No, Archer. Yeah. So I guess he'll be back up next summer. Yeah, he said he just made up his mind. He told me that. Well, I started thinking after he got a job too, you know. I was still trapping. He was right. I was still trapping while he was working for wages already. But I thought to myself, just like I'll just try to do the same thing as what he did. If he get a job, he's sticking it out, and I'll stick it out myself too. I thought, well, it's too hard, you know, too hard of trapping is too hard, and you have to go out. Miserable weather like the way we had today, snowing, blowing. You still have to go out if you have no job, if you're trapping. And now the fur is not worth anything, little few more dollars, but cost of the stuff. You just have to make sure that you're making a dollar every day to live like nowadays. Now it's so easy for some other people. Now it's, yeah, I guess you can live on food stamps and stuff like that too, you know. But you can't depend on that very long. It's so hard, you know.
Well, it seems like there aren't really a lot of jobs in most villages. And there's only a few jobs available.
Yeah.
So how about young people that want to find a job?
Well, I guess they could find a job if they're just looking for it, you know, if they just get out of town and leave that booze alone, you know, leave the booze alone. Like when the pipeline was going full swing, they could have to find a job, a lot of them. They had a good opportunity to have a good, nice attitude, and if they just used to have it, but the dope, like the way I said, everything's just coming out now, that dope and all that stuff, you know, just that's all they need now. They said, like in our days, them things we didn't even see. We couldn't even flash a bottle around on the street like in our days. Nothing.
What would happen if
we
did that?
We did that, we've been thrown in jail right now. Lock us up. Like the one time there was a Summers had hired a guy here, and me and his son Johnny Summers, he was a flyer. He was just landed. And he had a bottle and was coming up, walk up the street, and we gave him a drink there. I was still single. But this guy got drunk pretty fast. So he got drunk, and then the marshal was getting food out of the store. He was doing some shopping right there. And he seen this guy drunk up there. Told that guy to come on down, brought him up, locked him up for 2 months. Got 2 months thrown in jail for nothing. Now these kids nowadays, they do anything. They can break into the school, break the window, murder somebody, you don't get nothing. You can't do nothing like that in them days, in our days. That's what's surprising me nowadays. Like Eddie Hildebrand's truck, last couple of weeks ago, four tires, guy that depending on it, to go up to meet the mail plane, first thing in the morning, that's what he thinks of, is his mail plane. He went out to look at his truck, here the four tires were sliced down. See how them kids are doing? Like last winter, somebody broke into this school. Just partly, guys knew the guys who done it, called the trooper down, talked to these kids, and that's it. Let them go. Well, hell, they can do the same thing again. We get out of it, we can do the same thing again. See, now now these things, is just everything is compared to different from our days, you know. That's how these kids are. Do anything they want to do. You wouldn't see it. Like if somebody passed water right on, one time there was an old guy from Caltech, passed water right on the, near the walk there. They had walks all over on the front street and the back street. There was an old guy there, passed water there, got thrown in jail for 6 months.
6 months?
6 months, tell you the truth.
He couldn't get out for 6 months?
Yeah. And guy had families. Guys had families them days. And how we were doing, how they used to do is just making a living with trapping. And nowadays, kids just getting out of diapers or still in school. You see them handling bottles just like that. Now in our days, I wish they were in our days, shucks, lucky, a marshal would even come to your door and come into your place. Take you out of your place if you were having a party in your place. If they hear you, know he's making noise in your place. They just walk right in there and pick you up and lock you up. That's how hard it was in our days. Now, Jason, you know, them kids think nothing of it. Just jump in a boat and run up to us. I got cost up the gas. In our days, it was only 3 to 3.5 a can. And it was really high. That's just like high for $20 a barrel for gas. Not $20. 3.5 a can that day. And when the Standard Oil came into Keokuk, they had Standard Oil there, $20 a barrel. And gee, you had hell of a time to get even $20 to buy a barrel of gas. And there was 3 liquor stores here as I was growing up.
In Nulato.
3 stores. And you know what the pint of whiskey cost that time? $1.50. Huh. And you couldn't even get $1.50 that time. Nowadays, them kids, they can buy $20, $30 a bottle and think nothing of it. See, that's how you, this law here nowadays is just, they might as well just have no law for these kids. He'll just wreck anything. You make a complaint on them. The trooper come on down and he'll talk to them. Forget about it. But in our days, shucks, if we did something, if we broke a window or something, we don't replace that window right now. We're locked up. And window pin was cost of 10 by 12 window pin was only 2 bits them days. Yeah, nowadays it's just everything is just too easy and just too handy.
There's no marshal here now.
No, there's one right next door in Galena, though. But heck, you, like the way I said, a couple of kids broke into the school last week, broke right that window there. Yeah, broke all the ceiling tile, they came through this way. This is the way they came. They came through, take that ceiling tile off, took over $600 out of the office, broke the safe out, took over $600 out of the school there, out of school money. Kids, what they were raising to travel with, took that. And partly, just like we just knew the kids who done it, called the trooper down. talked to these two boys, went on home, think nothing of it. See, it's just too easy now. Every summer, kids breaking into these schools down here. This is the first time kids have been broke in. Every summer they used to break in. And I can't stay up 24 hours a day. No, shucks, I can't be watching this place 24 hours a day. I have to go to bed at night and sleep. I have to get up 4 o'clock in the morning, go down 10 miles to look at my king net, come back, then go to work again. And now it's just, they stay up all night, drink all night, smoke that dope. See that all that stuff coming out, that's just what hurting themselves with. They're just hurting themselves. That's all they're doing. That's why I get pissed off at these kids nowadays. All this education they're going through for nothing. For nothing. They might as well just not even go to school sometimes, the way I think. You ask some of these kids for something, to give you something. You don't understand what the hell we mean. I mean, the kids that had high school education. Oh, that would burn me up. See, you know that? No, see that? Just think of dope. Like my brother's kid had a job done and got a job there. No, he couldn't hike it. And his dad talks to him, try to give him a good home, what he can just go by, you know, just to try to realize himself. See, he could follow his dad, but no. But that's just the way my son did, you see. He just didn't listen to me. I talk to him. I help him on his wheel. Everything. But no, he just didn't listen to me. And that's just the way where he's at right now. Just left 3 kids and his wife behind. Now I have to take care of the kids too. Yeah. Just this dope is... That should be just completely gone. I don't know why they try to put that out illegal, you know. Like the way the law is just, might as well have no law. The way the kids are doing, shooting all over and along the beach in town. In our days, marshals see you with handling gun. If you're staggering around, you're up there locked up. 6 months. No matter even your family is hungry or 50, 60 below. If your wife got not even stick wood out there, well, that's your hard luck. That's just the way it was in our days. Oh, nowadays, you can do anything. You can partly kill a person and you'll still get away from it. Probably just get locked up maybe for about a month and turn you loose again. You know, that's bad like that, you know. If you enforce that law real strong like the way it was in our days, probably the kids would quieten down drinking. But just the way it is right now is the first night we soon have no law and just keep going drinking. That's the way they think. That's what really burns me once in a while. The more since I lost my son, you know, the more I think of his drinking, you know, I like to have a beer or two. Ever since I got married, you know, I just slacked off on my drinking. After I had a bunch of kids, you know, I'm just like taking bread and butter out of my kids' mouth every time I buy a bottle of booze. Like if I buy a bottle of booze for $15, $20 a bottle, that's just taking the bread and butter out of my kids' mouth. That's the way I think, and it hurts me. But nowadays, it's just so easy. They just don't give a shit. Oh, that's what burned me since I lost my son, you know, that this dope and stuff like that, you know, drinking. Steady going, you know, this booze is too much. It's too much. And when they make good wages, well, shucks, they got long years ahead of them. They can put that few dollars away they make right now and save it, you know. Put it away for themselves. You know? but they can use and buy new machine or kicker, stuff like that. No, you don't think like that. Now, a lot of these boys made a lot of good money this summer in firefighting. How many of them you think are going to have snowballs this week? The whole village should have brand new snowballs, but no. So much food, that doesn't go. I'm really against that dope. That's just losing their mind. You know, they just go to education for nothing. After, while they're still in high school, they're using that dope. A lot of times I go through this back door here, you see them teenagers smoking. There's a stone there. Well, what's the use to go to school? They're not using their brain. Their brain is gone, not like long ago. Like the way I am right now, because they have little schooling, they think that they're smart. Huh? They know everything. No, you know, they got a lot of things that they got to know yet. A lot of things. Like me, I don't have hardly any school, I don't have no schooling. But anything somebody is doing that what I doesn't know, or even what I know what they're doing, I like to watch them. Watch them and learn more about it. Maybe I did something wrong, but I know what they were doing. What they were doing, the same thing as I'm doing. Now I just watch them more. Now, like furnaces, they got wiring just like all kind of electrical. I can do little electrical work or anything to what I didn't went to school for, but I just watch the guys. I follow the guys and watch them real close, what they're doing with that wire. And I can do electrical work, little electrical work. I can weld, do a little welding. I can brace. I can take them furnaces right down to just right stripped right down to where it's nothing left of it. Take on all the wires, but I have to mark every wire that I take off and where it goes, and where it goes supposed to go back when I'm ready to put back together. Like this summer, the maintenance guy came down here to check on what we were doing. He said, well, I want to look at your furnaces. I told him this last winter, one furnace bearing went out, the blower bearing went out. There's completely nothing left of it. Just couldn't cut. So I went on the phone. I want a 3/4 inch bearing, furnace blower bearing. You think I got it? No. Right up till this last week, I got the parts. What I did, I started thinking. I put a snow globe bearing in it. What made it work the whole, till right up to last week. Yeah, snow globe bearing. I had to think a little bit. A lot of stuff when you're alone, you get stuck with something. You have to stop to think how you think you can do it the easiest way, you know, because I went through it all my life. I got a really swift place down there with fish wheel. We handle it by myself. I handle it by myself. I jump off the stand and everything drifts, knocks it off. I put it back up. While my wife is sitting on the beach watching me, I put it back up by myself. I don't take off nothing. I don't even knock off the paddles. All I got is this one come along. Put it back. And you just have to stop, think how you're going to do it the easy way. And you just do it. You just do it your way. And you just, everything comes just easy. But like nowadays, you get some of these kids that had well education, you bring them down to, hey, can you fix that thing? No, they wouldn't know. Like last spring, I hired some boys. Just got through with 12, got out of school. Had all the education he needed. I tell him, well, help me to set up wheel. Brought him down. He don't know what to do. No. I have to keep hollering at him what to do. So I brought him back up. I thought, no use to have him on the wheel, he might fall in. So I brought my little boy down. I brought my wife back down. She went back down. She's been helping me since 1974, ever since the commercial fishing started. She pushed out the wheel by herself while I'm standing out on the wheel. We don't even use pry. You know, when I first started, gee, I used to pry like hell. But it's so swift that you couldn't even hardly bulge that wheel. Well, so I told my wife, hey, this is easier some way. It should be easier than this. I gotta stop. I put this pole down. I don't even bulge that wheel. My wife trying to push the rocks, nothing. The rocks are too heavy for it. What we put behind the spars. I told him, no, this is too much like work. I got something up at home that'll do that work for us. What I got to come along up at the house doing? That should be right here. So he said, how are you going to do that? We'll just get back in the boat. We'll go up. I'll get it. And I'll fix it to where you just use your one hand to push this wheel out. He said, no way that you can hook it up. Tell him, I'll get in the boat and let's go. And our wheel was still standing straight up. Couldn't hire nobody. So we came up, we ate dinner. So he's still talking about that wheel. He's telling me, get somebody to help you to push it out. You're going to push that wheel out by yourself while I'm working at that wheel. After I got everything fixed up, she got kind of mad. She said, no way that I'm going to push that wheel by myself. If you can't push it, I don't see how I'm going to push it. I got a top maul and an inch and a quarter pipe, about 2 feet long, 3 feet long. We went back down and got to the water line, drove the pipe in, tie a rope back to the end of the spar lock, hook to come along to it. Here, go ahead, push it out and I'll go out and measure the water. She looked at me and told me, you're crazy. How the hell do you think I'm going to push it out? Just crank that come along with one hand and push it out. It'd be just like Samson, I told her, you know, making fun. Mm-hmm. She got mad at me again. Okay, tell me, go ahead and start that wheel up and try to start it. Show me how you're going to do it. I said, okay. I grabbed the handle and I just start cranking. And then pretty soon the wheel started going. And I told her, go ahead and try it. She grabbed it and started pushing it like that. Pretty soon the wheel got deep enough to where it'll turn. She said, I told her, you see, you're just like Samson. You see how easy it is, I told her. I said, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And from there on, we used that wheel, come along. I tell a lot of people, and they still, a lot of them didn't understand how I hook it up. And I tell them this, you just have to think. When you're working hard by yourself, you should think, guy, have to stop to think. How can things go easy? And like that time I was taking care of the oil camp down there. They had, drilling rigs, you know. Everything was there. My two little boys was that big. They pulled them out of school every spring. The flood came. Flood. That was the last. Like the way we leave our place right here, just like the way I did right here. I just walked out of our place. Just leave everything there. Because we got everything. The oil camp furnished me everything. So when we just moving down after late May, when the waters just start coming, we moved down with the kids. So we just walked out of our house, just grabbed a padlock and just threw it in the lock and we're going. Just change up our clothes, that's all we go down with. Because we got everything done. The oil company furnished everything. So but that one spring it was flood. We worked for 3 days and 3 nights. My two little boys, we had a 2 D8 cats and 1 6. My two little boys was working with me. I go up to my waist in the ice water while the ice was running. That's how fast the water was rising. And my wife, the ice just shot right up the bank, just pushed right up the bank when the ice started moving. And the water was coming. Water was raising to our bunkhouses already. We moved it. I was getting stuck, and my little boy was twisted. And then my wife thought of that dogs. The ice was just coming right over, but it stopped just like that. So she ran there. I didn't know what she taught him. And she just unsnapped the dogs, 7 dogs. She just ran out of there, and them dogs started running around. We had one piece of beaver meat hanging. We're half dry. And they got into that. And that ice just felt just like that, right after we untied our dogs. I was getting stuck, and my little boys was pulling me out with another cat. You have to stand up and shift. We worked 3 nights and 3 days on just on 1 can of fruit. And when we got to where we were going to stay, we'd see them planes circling over us. And there was a big lumber pile down there, which we left the company boat on, kicker boat. I didn't care, but we just dropped this tool hut again. But it was halfway in the water. You just see that gas, it's a streak of it just going out. I couldn't move nothing no more. I was just that tired. Wife was tired. Little kids were just no sleep and cold. So we just dropped this one constant hut again. We couldn't even put our beddings out anymore. We just put the little kids with this sunny day, you know. We just threw out our sleeping bags and just laid on that, went to sleep. When we woke up, you just see that gas just streaking out, all full of gas. And there was a freezer. Tell you the truth, I was so tired. About 20 feet away from us, there was a freezer. A freezer about that big that floated off them drill pipes down there. I wouldn't even go down there to even try to save that freezer. When I woke up, that freezer was gone too. I was just that tired and cold. We stayed there when we was out of the flood level then. We're on the flood level, out of the flood. We just watched the ice moving. So water started dropping, and then I thought of this boat, and then with my 2 little boys, we went along the edge of this hill to this lumber pile. I know that boat was tipped over, but I wasn't sure it was there. And there was a wagon there, a little trailer wagon there, Wanigan. There was a kicker in there too, but it was underwater. Sure enough, this boat was just, the water was just dropping, but it did. The ice just pushed it against the hill. So I told my little boys, let's go down and try to push that boat over before the water dropped too much on it. So we did that. We flipped it over. We just splat hit it, hit the water. Far as we can do. So I thought of this kicker and pulled this Wanigan out, the door was kept over, but I chopped the door open. The kicker was underwater, it's all full of mud. So what I did, I just started working on it right away. Took the carburetor off with little tools I had, took it apart and cleaned it, and then I cranked it up. Took right off, too. I was surprised, it took off and had it running. So the next day, I told my wife, we want to come up this way, look, see if we can make it to here. So we made it down to about 4 miles. But where the ice was going to hit, it was pretty good. I can go way out, past the ice, I thought. So I went back. We got up early the next morning. We knew our places, everything's all wet. So we came up, when we came out of 2 miles down there, you just see nothing but tents up there on the hill, all ice just all piled up in front of the street. Went up in the slough there, landed, and we went to our place, everything was just soaking wet. Just everything. All our bed, everything wet, brand new bed, everything. So I just called. Then the mail plane came and there was wings flying in that time. I known the guy real good, the pilot. So I told him I'm gonna go to Galena and make some phone call. The company is paying for it. I forgot the company anyway. Ted Matthews, yeah, was the company. He said he'll call him. And he said, I told him, sure, that'll be good. And so I called him as soon as he got. So the next day they came on down, they landed here. I was waiting here for them, and I told them the damage of our place. I told them I couldn't take care of that place down there to move everything down there. And he said that couldn't help. You know, he said, let's just forget about it. Just work at your place there. So there was no food in the stores. Well, they had everything all, and we had no food. I told him that we moved for 3 days, and what kind of food? We didn't have no meat, couldn't kill no ducks. So when we finally got settled a little bit, we had a little flour, a little butter, and a little, we just started cooking hotcakes, that's all, till we came up, and then till he brought food down for us again. Planes flying over us, but we couldn't do nothing. We knew that they couldn't do nothing with us, you know. So it was a rough life then, there, right there, to another one. Well, I'm tired now. She was, that late, 20 after 10.
20 after 10.
Stop right now.